Let's get out to the Banner Brothers hotline and bring in our special guest, Dick Harmon. Dick, how many seats will be given away?
I would imagine probably 8,000.
Wow, 8,000. That's a strong number. Just because they're free, I mean, you can't, as the email stated, you can't just set these things right on the ground. They got to be drilled into the wall. And even then, you better drill it into concrete. Otherwise, that thing's going to be pulling out of the wall if you sit down in it.
Yeah, but, you know, you got to realize that some people have already bought those seats. They bought them a long, long time ago, and then they've also repurchased them. So there are a couple of owners for a lot of those seats that have passed on through generations since 1971. So the demand has been brisk, according to the special events coordinator in the Marriott Center. And I would imagine they've gone through those initial donors. This week they're going to offer them to the Career Club members. I can't remember how many Career Club members there are. There's probably 4,000 or 5,000. Could be more than that. I don't have an exact number, but they'll go through those, you know, see what they want. And then, you know, at the end, it'll probably open up to the public. And I've heard from a lot of people throughout the country that say, where can I get one? I want one. But you're right. I mean, these aren't just ordinary seats that you're just going to sit down and sit in. They'll have to be maintained in a certain way and presented in a certain way. But they are what they are. It's a memorabilia. It's a trophy.
Oh, I love it. When did you hear about this? And are you going to get yourself a set of seats?
You know, if I got one of those, my wife would make me take it to the dump. I've got enough clutter over the, around my house and here down in the basement here where I work, and then out on the patio, I have a little corner where I've been putting stuff. No, it would not fly at my house, nor have I been offered one. I'm just your humble correspondent.
Yeah, our seats aren't even that comfortable, are they, Dick?
No. In fact, I thought that they were the most uncomfortable seats I've ever sat in. And through the years, since 71, when I graduated from high school, I've only got bigger and wider, and there's been more of me, and they don't fit in those seats. I don't regularly sit in them anyway. I'm not in the stands for hardly anything, usually down on press row where we have our own problems. My daughter-in-law was a member of the BYU dance team, and I did go to a couple of her concerts. She was a wonderful dancer, very talented, and I was sitting in those seats, and it was not comfortable.
Dick Harmon from the Deseret News on with us here at Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. We've been talking a lot about recruiting. I know you don't typically cover recruiting, Dick, but it's something that we've talked about a lot. And regarding these recruits, a lot of them were competing in the Utah State track and field events, and they did quite well. We're talking about the McChesney kid out of Lone Peak placing second in the 100, also Troy Hines' little brother, Ty Hines, getting first in the 100 meters. Were you able to follow anything regarding the Utah State track and field events?
I looked at some of the numbers. I saw that Riley Burt, finished, in the top four in the 100 meters. I think it was the 100 meters. I was really interested to see how he would perform because of his size. The kid, I think, that won one of the divisions, I think it was from Orem High School, he wasn't a recruit. He's not a football player, I don't think. But you know, I'm always interested in sprinters because I ran in the track meet a long time ago.
Dick, you were pretty fast.
Dick, 100 pounds ago, I could run.
But were you the fastest Harmon brother? That's the question.
Of course. Yeah, I was faster than Phil. Phil used his head. I mean, he still got stars. He'd tackle with lead with his head, and he was a pretty good running back, defensive back, but I think he's still suffering from the consequences of leading with his head.
Oh, man. Now you got me scared because that's how I led with my head, man. I just saw stars, man.
That's why you host a radio show, man.
I know. This is getting bad. I don't know if that's why. I think there's many people that are asking on a consistent daily basis, how does this guy have a show? Go ahead.
Well, I just had a question for Dick. We were talking about recruiting and about the guys, the coaches that are in the living room. And generally, people talk about Bronco as kind of the closer. You know, a guy goes in the living room and gets it done. But it sure seems like they have a very diverse personalities among the coaching staff that go in and do the recruiting with Garrett Touget and Guy Holiday. Who do you think would be the most effective recruiter? What stories have you heard that maybe would indicate what are those coaches are really good recruiters out there?
Well, I think you have a different set of different personalities, like you mentioned. I think Bronco's going to be coming in the closer because when you have the head coach, you've got the aura about him. Oh, this is the head coach, and what is he going to say, and how is he going to say it? And so you have that particular personality. You have Robert and I, who, you know, awkwardly funny, awkwardly effective. You have a guy like, I call it the passion crew, guys like Mark Achiuwa and Papinga. And Garrett Touje, these are guys that come in there with so much energy and so much passion, and they just sell it like the best vivid security guy in the field, and they're just hopping all over everything, and you can feel their love for the program. And then you have somebody like Guy Holliday, not LDS, but very committed to BYU and its mission, going into homes, and I have heard stories from Texas, where he's gone in, and people respect him because he just is very frank. He's very upfront about what's expected. He also sells that this is a unique opportunity you won't find anywhere else. It's not for everybody, but if you come here, you know, it can change your life. I've heard that he's been around the Dallas area and done some great things inside homes and talking to people about BYU. And he has a unique ability to sell BYU as an outsider. And you know, just this way, just today, BYU coaches were down in Crosby, Texas, which is across Lake Houston from Houston, and they made an offer to a offensive lineman named Keenan Murphy. They were there earlier and made an offer to his wide receiver, Manny Netherly. And, you know, shortly after his visit, Utah's coaches showed up. Scally and Roderick were in there, and then you know, also their coach from Colorado who played at the University of Stanford, his name's Troy Walters. So those guys have all been over there, you know, looking and recruiting. And Holliday has been all over the school for the past, I would say, half a year, and he's leading the charge in some of those homes. And as a front, I think he's probably one of the most effective recruiters the Bronco has right now.
Yeah, don't you love just kind of perusing through an article written about Guy? And you can typically find maybe 2-3 phenomenal quotes or inspirational sayings from Guy Holliday, whether it's in an interview or in an article, every single time.
Yeah, you know, you look at his resume, and he's put 22 people into the NFL during his career, either being drafted or as free agents, and he knows his stuff. And I think that he is really a he's been a solid hire by Bronco at a time that they really need more Guy Holidays. I wish they had 2 or 3 more.
Dick, Justin Anderson settling in as the recruiting coordinator at BYU. How does he fit into this whole recruiting area? Because really, when you think about it, there really haven't been their recruiting coordinator position for a long time. It's been several years that things have been going there. And Justin's a local guy from Orem. Where does he fit into all this, and how do you think he's settling into that position?
I think early on when I interviewed him, when he just had been hired, I think about 7 days, you know, it was hard to tell what his you know, really game plan was, because he was just on the job. He was trying to shuffle around papers and empty boxes. I asked him a couple of questions, and he had to ask other people when those dates were for junior day and other things like that. But I think that he's been on top of, you know, getting the coaches in the right state on the right airplane and hotel accommodations. He's been doing the calendar type things, and that's probably taken a lot of his time. But I think where his real benefit will come for Bronco is that he has coached high school in Florida with his brother Tyler. He's coached now in Louisiana. He's been an LDS bishop, so he's very familiar with the LDS athlete. But he's familiar with the outside recruiting, especially in the Deep South. And I think that will help not only target certain areas, but certain type of personalities that might fit into BYU, and coaches that he's networked with in the Southeast Conference area. So, you know, it's still too early to tell what the impact will be, but I think the flavor's right, the personality's right, and Justin, you know, he's a natural-born leader. He's kind of a quiet guy, but I think because of his coaching experience, he could be used as a talent evaluator probably better than somebody that hasn't had an experience, you know, actually in the trenches coaching. And so it's a unique hire in that aspect that he has been a coach, a very successful coach, an experienced coach in the field, and now he's behind the desk it'll be interesting to see how they use him during football practices. They have their assistant coaches. Maybe Ben knows the rules more than I do, but I've seen coaches out there with very small titles doing a lot to help move a practice forward. I don't know what he's allowed to do. I think there are restrictions, but it's kind of nice to have somebody back there that might evaluate things in a team room or off the practice, or maybe just talk to players after practice and whatever is allowed. So I think that that's a valuable commodity for Bronco to have in Justin Anderson.
I think having a creative mind too, like you mentioned, like an experienced guy that has seen different aspects of high school and college football, that creativity will lend itself to more success, in my opinion. You mentioned Junior Day. When is Junior Day, and what have you heard about it?
Well, I think it's coming up. I think it's the second week of June. They'll be inviting, all the players that you've all expect would be invited, plus some others. And there's some others I know from Texas that are wanting to make it out here. They're trying to find some transportation avenues to get out here because they have to pay their own way. And if they can do that, they will. I don't know the exact date. I can't remember. Justin, when I asked him, was trying to search for that date, and he said, get back to me. And I don't know when it's nailed down, but I think it is in June, early.
Dick Harmon from the Deseret News on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Let's move over to the hardwood. Quincy Lewis and the recent hire of him, I'm excited. I think you've mentioned him in a couple of different articles, but as he's settled in now, what is his role right now? Have they stated what his role is going to be?
I think they're still trying to determine that. He's going to have to adjust his whole staff. We do know that they elevated
Tim Lacombe?
Tim Lacombe. Why can't I think of Tim Lacombe?
They elevated it's the offseason, that's why.
assistant head coach to Tim Lacombe. And, that's a big thing for him, because when you start throwing around titles and creating titles for people, it means money. And so he probably got a little bit of an uptake there.
And future money, too, when he ends up getting a pay raise going somewhere else.
Exactly. So titles are important in this business. And then I think they're going to shuffle things around. I would envision, I haven't heard because I haven't been able to have access to Dave Rose. I did go poke my head in there the other day when I was doing the Marriott Center thing, and a couple of coaches were there, but they were too busy to talk. But I think that what his role will be is obviously recruiting, number one. Number two, I would hope that they would put him in charge of defense and have him work with the defense. They might give him the big guys because Pope, obviously, there's an absence there with him gone. You know, Quincy is a very experienced coach. I talked to Ken Wagner at BYU Hawaii, who he played for him and coached with him, I believe. And he said, I would hire Quincy in a heartbeat. I wouldn't even think about it because of the versatility of what he brings as an assistant coach. Not just breaking down films and doing scouting reports, but he knows what to do on the court. He was a point guard. He knows the importance of big men, where to position themselves, how to get them around the block, how to teach basketball fundamentals. He's a good recruiter. He's got contacts in the Rolodex that doesn't end. Because of his AAU experiences. So, number one, I would say he'll be given some recruiting responsibilities that will be very important. And then I think and I hope that he'll be given a look at trying to increase BYU's defense. But when you got 14 seconds to get rid of the ball on offense, there's not a lot of offensive thought to go into it. And obviously, last season, there wasn't a lot of defensive thought going around either.
Yeah, what about the new rules that might be implemented? Shorter shot clock, 30 seconds. Getting the ball across the court quicker. What do you think about some of the new rules and how will they affect either BYU or the game?
I think it will help BYU because they're used to doing it right now, and that's what their offense is. I think it will be a little bit of a challenge to some teams like the University of Utah that runs Rick Majerus's slow down. Don't even really look at the bucket until 8 seconds, 9 seconds are left in that shot clock. They're now going to have to come down and readjust their whole thinking and get into their offense a lot earlier. And I think it takes an advantage away from some coaches that like to play that plotting game and wear people down on defense by just passing the ball around not really making a move, but just doing that as a ploy to wear down other teams to make them play defense. So that's going to take them. What is the percentage there? That's going to be what would we say, 10%, 12% less time on offense. I don't know what the number would be, but yeah, it's going to cut into some of those plotting teams.
Dick, some roster moves this summer already for BYU with a couple of guys hitting the road. Where do you see this ending up? Do you think that there's one more guy that maybe they're trying to bring in to fill the roster? Or do you think that the roster might be set at this point?
It wouldn't surprise me if Dave Rose came up with one more person. I think that looking over the roster last year, there were so many unproductive people. Either they were injured or they weren't capable of playing, or they just simply didn't answer the bell for one reason or another, and some of them may have been redshirted and take them out of the rotation. And I wouldn't be surprised if there might be a medical situation crop up during the summer where they had medical guy, which would free out a scholarship. I think this Hamson kid from Pleasant Grove, the 7'3", 7'4", center that will be home late in the summer, talking to a lot of AAU coaches, he's a guy that belongs in a BYU uniform. Jennifer Hansen's brother, he had some medical conditions that prevented him from really being a very physical player with a lot of stamina, and that was taken care of before his mission. I would like to see BYU get a rim protector and a guy that can hit a few shots, and he seems to fit that bill to just shore up things behind Corbin Kafusi.
Wow, that would be interesting. What is he, 7'4" or so?
I think he's about 7'3", 7'4", very active, got a 10-foot jump shot, play around the rim. He can defend the rim as a shot blocker. And if you have somebody like that, it changes your whole defense. You look what happened with Utah Jazz when all of a sudden they got a guy that can block shots and come from the weak side and make a couple of plays. It changed everything with the way they did. And the way they played and were capable of playing. I think BYU's been missing that rim protector that showed up greatly against Mississippi in the NCAA tournament.
Dick, we weren't given access to Dave after the decision was made that Isaac Nielsen needed to move on. What do you think the thought process was in Dave Rose's mind to do this with a kid that had just finished his redshirt freshman year and had his ups and downs, but so did a lot of guys on the roster? What do you think led Dave Rose to go, you know what, I think we're better off if he is not in the program?
That's a great question. It might be tied to what we just talked about with maybe bringing in some new fresh blood. But I was surprised. I thought in ways that he played very, very well for Dave, given the fragmented minutes that those big men were given and the roles that they were asked to play and how they were used or not used. I thought that he, for minutes played, he probably was at some point one of the most protective big men that they had. And so it did surprise me, but knowing the way these things happen, usually at the end of the season you call in players and you say, this is what I envision your role is going to be next year. Can you live with that? And if you can't, let's find another place for you. And it may have been that Isaac Nielsen said, I think I can play more than that. What you've described to me behind Corbin Kafusi, I think that I can contribute more. I'll go look somewhere. So it may not have been a case where you call a guy in and say, hey, you know what, we're cutting you loose right now. It may have been more of a dialogue back and forth where it was presented what the role would be, and then they came to a decision with the coach to say, you know what, I've got to play more minutes, I've got to get on with my career, and I'm not going to accept that.
How many players will they take to Spain, Dick? Some people have pointed out that they're going to take at least 10. We had Jonathan Tavernari on this last week. He said taking 10 is too many. You got to develop the chemistry. You got to develop the talent, and you want those guys to have as much playing time there as possible. But then again, you don't want to get a guy like Kyle Collinsworth injured there either. So how many guys will they take to Spain, do you think?
I think they take 8. It surprised me if they took 9. I think you're right. I think Jonathan's right that they got to get some experience for some kids. They also want to, they might choose some people that they need for team chemistry to try to build something because they know they're going to need them. So from that standpoint, I think they're going to look very carefully at who they doil it out to.
We had Greg Grubel on. He thinks that Zach Seljaas is a lock, true freshman, 6'8", 6'9", shooting guard / small forward. He was the 4A Gatorade player of the year here in the state of Utah. I'm surprised that a true freshman is slated as a lock for Spain.
Well, here's the situation with that. You just lost one of the best mid-range shooters in the country, in Tyler Hawes, and you know he's not replaceable, but close to being replaceable is a versatile scorer like Zach. If you've ever watched highlight films of him, he can play a point guard, he can play the two, he can play the three. He's very active, he's a good rebounder, he's a good defender. I think they need to have him contribute and play possibly as many as 14 to 16 minutes next year. He could work into a 20-minute performer right out, you know, as a freshman. He's that good. So I think his versatility is something that they have to plug into. He's not a one-dimensional player, and, you know, I could totally see that him being a lock.
Who's going to be the backup point guard there in Spain, do you think?
I think maybe Little Emery might be given a chance at doing that. I think that Collinsworth, of course, has that lockdown, but I think you might see Nick Emery be given an opportunity, even though he's more of a shooting guard. He's undersized. He's a decent ball handler. I don't know if he's a great one. Darnell's seen him play more than I have in person. Maybe not, though. You were in Nebraska and in Lincoln at the time. I don't know.
Well, I did see some video, and I've seen him play live a little bit. I think he's got pretty decent handles. I'm not sure. He's more of a point guard in the mold of Jimmer, where he gets the ball, he's going to the basket. He's not really looking necessarily to find somebody. And so it depends on what your offense wants, I suppose.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that, I don't know, I'd have to think and break that down a little bit. We don't know, you know, that much about Jordan Chapman. I don't think that he's the guy that's going to step in and be able to do that. I think you could throw Chase Fisher over there a little bit, although he doesn't have a great hand on the ball. I don't know. That's a good question. I'd have to go and see how they're playing right now and who's making inroads going up against Collinsworth, because that will tell you that he's going to have to guard Collinsworth and he's going to have to bring up the ball and play his. And with Frank Bartley gone, that kind of opens the door for a lot of different combinations there. Frank was the guy. Yeah. You know, he took off, so.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I think Emery's definitely an option, and I'm not opposed to saying that Corey Calvert couldn't just slip in there and have Emery slide over to the two behind Chase Fisher.
You know, that's the point. You know, we don't think about the return missionary guys, but you know, he's coming off. We don't know how good he'll be, or if he's going to be in shape, or be injury prone. A lot of those missionaries come off and they end up with a stress fracture or a sprained ankle or a sore back, and then they're not productive. But and Calvert was a very good player in the state of Colorado. He's the Gatorade Player of the Year and one of the top athletes in the state. And we saw a little bit of him, but not a lot of him. And he'd probably get a chance.
Dick, as always, doing a tremendous job on our airways, adds more value than any of us, and that includes myself. But Darnell is right there with you, neck and neck. You guys should probably have your own show. I don't even know what I'm doing here.
No, I can't even remember Tim Lacombe's name, so, you know, you guys pull me off the airways. But, no, Darnell's great. We worked together many years at the Daily Herald before I went to the Deseret News. I got great respect for him. He's also a neighbor, and we grew up together. My kids have worked with him, and, Kylie was an Agate clerk, and go on and on. I just wish you two all the luck in the world.
You're the man. Thanks.
Thanks, Dick.
We always need that luck. I need that luck. Darnell, not so much, but I do. Dick Harmon from the Deseret News, always dropping gems.